Welcome back to It Starts With You podcast with me, Mark Hopkins. And in this podcast, we get to speak to, again, the man, Thomas Woodhams. And if you remember in the previous podcast, he spoke to us about his condition, or discovering his condition, I should say, ADHD, and getting on to the medication and starting to learn something about himself. We are now 9, 10 months on since our conversation. A man, he has changed and is amazing, and oh my God, I'm so happy for him and the journey that he's been on and continuing going on. Quick note on this podcast as well. For some reason, my microphone reverts to the laptop's microphone and not the one I use all the time. So apologies for my sound quality. I hope you can still bear with it, and I hope that you can still hear Thomas and his awesome message that we talk about things. Hey Thomas, how are you, mate?
Good. Yeah, long time no speak. Good to do a second podcast with you, Mark. A long period of time, and to discuss, everything and what's going on.
From my perspective, it's been about nearly 9, 10 months since we last spoke. I think we spoke in the summer last year about kind of everything that you've been up to and kind of what's been going on in your life with the ADHD diagnosis and other things. And I thought, wow, you know, some time has gone by. What is Thomas up to? What is he doing? How is he coping? What's going on? Hopefully he's not ill. Like half the country seems to be at the moment. Which is not ill with a virus, ill with some stupidity bug, which is history. So what's been going on then since the last time we spoke? Then you obviously had diagnosis of ADHD, started the pills. How's it been going?
It's been going great. I think since the conversations that we originally had at the initial sort of finding out about it, dealing with sort of previous experiences. It's now got to sort of a point where you kind of, your body gets used to having tablets. And then you kind of just get some sort of structure into the day. I think at the initial period of taking them, you kind of, within 15 minutes of taking them, you know that you've had them. And it's kind of a weird feeling, more around sort of focus. And I think people that who do suffer with ADHD and have the symptoms, and I think there was a couple of people that reached out to me after the podcast, which is great. And I can say that I offer as much support as I can, but you kind of then start realizing when you're taking them, what matters, and especially trying to run a business that I've never run a business before, as we've previously spoken in a podcast, and taking sort of extra responsibilities, you then start having a way of life where you're able to understand and control what you're doing, which is fantastic for someone who's got ADHD, because you are able to focus on the task. Now, being that and saying that, there is obviously the pros and cons of having the tablets. There's the loss of appetite.
Really?
Or your body says you're not hungry, but you're kind of then forced to eat. But then as you do the work, as anyone in the recruitment world would know, you kind of then, something will come in, something will change, or then got feedback, and then you're then refocusing on getting them in through the next stage. Then you've got to format CVs. But the issue that, well, not the issue, but with having the condition, you're just focusing in on one task, which normally, if I didn't have the tablets and in a normal world, well, not normal world, but in the previous sort of ways I worked, to take on, I felt that 3 or 4 or 5 CVs, I'd be thinking, yeah, I can take it on. And then you kind of lose train of thought and your attention to the work then starts to come off pace.
Yes.
And then you start getting off the bar stool or wherever you're working, or getting off your chair and then sort of going back to your chair, saying, all right, okay, I'll do it in 5 minutes. And then you're going back to do the work, and then you're kind of like, right, another excuse, come away from the, it's too much. You might do two sentences in the TV, and then you're then coming away from your desk again. And the having the tablets obviously allows you to just focus on one CV.
Yeah.
As we all, as recruiters, that you have to keep all the plates spinning at one point.
Yes.
Which is quite hard for someone having this condition, that you can't do all the plates, because sometimes it feels a little bit overwhelming. And you're then just focusing on one task, then there might be three jobs you've got to fill, and then you kind of just want to get one filled first, then move on to the next one. And then in an ideal world, you want someone to be able to work on all three at the same time, which I can. But I think sometimes you're steering away from just having one CV and focusing on that. And that's what the tablets do. It does just let you hyper-focused on one thing.
So do you have to have more of a regimented kind of focus now? As in, you've got to do these tasks one at a time. You can't spin four plates at the same time. Or are you still able to do that? You're just going to be a little bit more conscious about how you do that.
I think I'm able to. The good thing is, luckily for me, I can spin all the plates. But sometimes I feel like I can't take on too much. So if, for example, I've got three jobs on or four, I think any more after four or five for myself, if I'm just working on them personally, then it does get a bit overwhelming. And obviously then have to prioritizing what the needs are for the client and what the business are. So what I kind of then start having conversations, but it's been so successful working with clients. And obviously don't say, look, up front, look, I've got ADHD, look, can you just give me two jobs and I'll just get on with it? you take on the jobs. You then, I kind of steer my conversations with, well, what's a priority for you guys at the moment? Where's the business needs are? How in order do you want this role? How urgent is the role?
Yeah.
Which then allows me, without sort of saying that I can't take on too much, allows me to then prioritize the jobs that I'm working, which then fits in with the client even better, because they're looking to hire X, Y, and Z because of X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
We don't really know the position, but just go out there and find them.
Yeah.
I'm kind of just now saying, look, tell me what you need now. Let me get the people. How long do you need them? When do you need them? And then it allows me to prioritize my workload and have a more scheduled regimen to my work.
That's good. That's good. So you're acting the way you work around the condition, but the condition is being really well managed at the moment. Do you find when you started taking the pills, you started focusing straight away, or is it a learn that you've had to go through, a gradual thing, or did that hyper focus come straight away?
Because it's just like anything, people adjusting to a new way of life. And like I've said in previous podcasts before, you're changing your life dramatically. It's a complete change.
I can imagine.
And you kind of just, the tablets you take, 15 minutes, it's in your system. You then sort of be, I can't understand, it's a feeling, everything just stops. For example, massive music, you're at a concert and there's loads of different instruments going off. Suddenly, this is in your brain, suddenly, you're listening to a solo singer or solo instrument being played, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So you're able to listen to that particular person and listen to exactly what they're playing for an example. So it just allows you to have one focus on one task, get on with it. But as I said, I've had to adapt my lifestyle to this to be able to progress as a person and be able to try and have it, well, to try and run a successful business at the current times. And especially what I mentioned earlier, kind of obviously probably people don't talk about coronavirus and stuff like that and going on to it, because it's been everywhere and everyone probably wants to bloody talk about something a bit different. But it kind of you kind of then start feeling, well, you kind of have to keep focusing on the goal. And luckily, some of the clients that I work with, I still have, well, in the tech space, there's still jobs going. And the status that I'm having is the show must go on.
Yeah.
Some of the ways, because they're still requiring people. It's luckily for the industry that I'm in, or the sector that I'm in, that technology and the way it is now is that people are able to remotely log in. There's obviously a lot of people are able to work from home. But for example, the other side of the business is construction, which for electricians, plumbers, white collar, blue collar, it's not as easy for them it's not easy for that sector, because they cannot remotely log in and do all the electrics or work that they need to do, because it's all manual.
You have to be on site for a lot of it. And that's actually coming, we'll touch upon the whole business situation in a bit. I'm interested in here, because you mentioned it about when we had that podcast last, people come out of the woodwork and started talking to you. One of our good friends, Mark Eastwood, was probably a big one that you guys started talking as well. Is that what you noticed? Is that now people are a little bit more relaxed and are happy to talk about it? Or is there still a bit of a stigma with it, do you find?
With mental health?
Yeah, with the ADHD issue.
You might notice a difference from speaking to me.
100%. I was going to say, actually, it is a complete difference to you. You are so much different than the last time we spoke. Even though you just started your medication at the time, and we spoke a couple of times in the room as well, when we haven't done a podcast, and it was a gradual change. But now, today, I know I haven't spoken to you for about 3 months, 4 months. That's a life. You're a completely different person, and that has definitely come out massively from my perspective. When people can contrast this and listen to your last podcast before this one or after this one, and see a huge change. Are you being told this? Are people telling you this?
Yeah, I think I think there's a quite a lot of sort of things that I've noticed. I think before, previously on the other podcast, and this is me being sort of honest, I was actually probably quite excited to be on a podcast.
Oh, yeah. Okay, fair enough. Yeah.
It was kind of really excited to be on a podcast. I see myself as quite a big, sort of quite big presence on LinkedIn. You're in the clicks of people as well. And I think from sort of your point, from your sort of side, you're a very non-judgmental person, which it allows a lot of people to warm to you, Mark.
Thank you.
Which allows me the conversations that we've had before previously when we were on the phone for nearly 2.5 hours. I gave you everything.
Yeah, the stories I heard, Tom. It's amazing.
If everything goes well in the dust, I think I should write a book. And I've had loads of people saying you should write a book, because some of the stories previously are unwritable. But yeah, going back to sort of me now, a lot of people go, "You're right. Are you okay?" And like I was saying to you before, normally, I said on the podcast, I'm so excited. I'm trying to do so many jokes, and I'm trying to be this center of attention and make people laugh, because I don't want to force to make people laugh. I do think that I have got quite a good personality, and that my energy does sort of pass on to people, and they can see the passion and enthusiasm that I have when I talk about things. But now it's kind of like I'm a tuned in version. I think I've mentioned that before on the podcast.
Now
a lot of people say version 2.0, but it is what it is, and I feel that my vocabulary, the conversations I'm having, a lot more structured. I'm being able to articulate myself in a more more tuned in way where I'm able to actually, this is something quite new for me as well, which sounds probably even weird, but I'm able to have debates with people about things.
Which is, I think, I mean, listening to you and obviously remembering what it was like when we had that 2.5 hour conversation and tell me about your stories that we talked about, the craziness of things that you got up to in previous life. And then you found out, when you found out why you were like that, and that epiphany moment in your life at that moment in time, now speaking to you as well, you in my humble opinion, what you've become, and listening to you and what you're talking about and how you're talking about things now, you've become, like you said, that 2.0 version of yourself. But you become more relaxed, more chilled, more realistic in your approach and the way you want to come across and the way you want to present yourself in the world, which is the real you, in my humble opinion. Whereas that other guy, like you were saying about that orchestra, you were screaming in a concert, weren't you? And trying to make yourself real noticed in that scenario. And the sad thing is, when we do that, we do all the wrong things, don't we, in life? Which is, it's quite interesting, really, really interesting.
I think sometimes it's you're trying to please people, and you're trying to, because a lot of people have a concept of you, or if anyone has an experience with someone, a lot of people and this in general, they normally have a general label over you.
Yeah.
And once they've had an experience that maybe might not be a great experience with a person, straight away the backs up, or you don't want to do this, or you don't want to, he's this or he's that, and you then start to realise that the people, obviously like your family and like sort of your really close friends, that you're able to, after a long period of time that people know you, you're then able to, and this is probably one of the key things as well, that it has taken me a very, very long time to not rebuild bridges, because I've never burnt any bridges with people, but to be able to showcase and able to emphasize on how much of a different person I am, because some people are extroverts, introverts, and I think after the podcast, there was these personality traits about being the personality trait actor. So people didn't think that you have a mental condition. It was more a personality trait. And there was a really good thing that I did see about the different personality traits. And then there was one called the actor, which always wants to be center of attention and trying to play to the crowd. And so you kind of think, well, if that is my, embrace the positives of being that person, but then also being able to be understanding to other people's personal traits, and try and realize and notice other people's traits and try and give them the positive things that they look for in their traits as well. I do take things to heart, and make an effort with people, messaging them, making sure they're okay. Now, I appreciate some people have family, children.
Yeah.
And I'm not in that situation, so sometimes I am take it a bit to heart when I'm messaging people day saying, why aren't you messaging me back? But I make a lot of effort with people. So I then take it as a personal attack, then it does make me feel a bit like, is it me?
That's nothing. I don't think that's anything to do with your ADHD. That's the conditioning that you've had throughout your life to get to that point in your life where you, like you said, you've tried to please people, but then you're looking for that feedback from these people, trying to get that feedback when you're trying to please them, and you think you're still that particular character. And this is a journey for you, mate. This is a journey. Now that you've sorted your head out and the headspace is clear, and you're thinking, like you said, you can have conversations, you can work properly, you can focus on things, and you're not getting yourself into troubles that we've talked about before in the past. Now it's time to work on you, if that makes sense. So it's a work in progress. I was chatting to a really good friend of mine, hopefully I'll get him back on the podcast soon, Paul, who does this mind space type stuff. Mental health isn't just about taking drugs, but it's also about realizing who you are as well and how you fit in society and accepting other people. And Paul always says to me, he talks about a variety of different things, and we are a victim of ourselves. So we've got to stop being a victim of ourselves, leave that person in the past, stop relying on that or focusing on that person who we were in the past, and now and create our future, create who we want to be in the future. What doesn't help in society is people saying leopard doesn't change its spot. It can. If you want to change your spot, you can change your spot. You can be who you are. But sadly, it's a process. It takes a while for you to come around that way of thinking, that thought pattern, change. And it's weirdly enough, it's habitual as well. So, you formed a habit of being like that. I know you're trying. I know you're getting away from that. Apologies, I'm using that. I'm using the past tense. You formed the habit of being like that person in the past. But now you're creating a new habit. People not coming back to you on phone calls or messages, that's their problem. I've put myself there. If they don't want to speak to me, that's fine. I'll catch up with them another time. And that's the problem. We're all in our own different orbits, aren't we, in our different worlds. And it's some of us, I do it. We get so engrossed in our own life, we forget that other people are trying to communicate with us at the same time. And because that's how we think and how we perceive things, that's how we kind of go. I think this is a part of ghosting as well. Candidates ghost us, and even clients now ghost us. I find very strange. I think this is the same psychology, People are so wrapped up in their lives.
I think sometimes it's this would be a prime example. And for taking it personally, there'd be candidates that I've had a conversation with. They're like, yes, Tom, this is exactly what I'm looking for. It's a really hard time at the moment. I've just been made redundant. Or for example, these are the examples that people probably come across.
Yeah.
So I spend my time with them. I get them the job. And then suddenly all these other interviews come out that they've been having. And then you've gone out your way, you've got them an interview on a Saturday, which in the IT world is quite unheard of to do like technical tests on a Saturday. So you're accommodating the candidate so they don't have to take any time off work. And then it's kind of like you've gone out your way to get them in and showcase them as a person. And then suddenly they said, oh, I've had a counter offer. I struggle with, if I've gone out my way, and I think everyone would, maybe some people, I then think that's a personal thing. It's a personal
because
I'm a sensitive person and I actually have a heart. Some people are a little bit more like, right, it's just, who cares? Right, get the next person in, get the next person in. And I'm not going to say that, look, I don't really feel like a cheese ball, but like, I actually generally do care, and people are like, well, how can you care? It's all about the money. You've got to get this salary. It's a bit different when you work for yourself. Obviously, yes, you're doing it to make money. But if I felt a personal attack against me because I've gone out my normal working ways to help, particularly help someone, I feel like, well, what's the point?
I agree. Yeah.
Especially when you're going out of your ordinary job role to accommodate someone that may have children, and you're doing all that because you feel that the conversations that you're having, they feel they wouldn't let you down. But then it's a personal thing. So then you think, well, I'm not going to do that for the next person. But then unfortunately you do get.
I think that's, exactly. And that's a part of your personality, of who you are. I'm similar to you as well, where we try to separate ourselves from this cold face version of recruitment that's out there. we try to be empathic and we try to be emotion driven with our, with the way we do things, and, you know, embracing people of who they are and helping them and trying to get them to the end goal. When they don't choose that, they go off in a different direction. We are personally insulted by that. And that, I hate that, by the way, that happens. I think is the most difficult part of our job when we've done that. And there is no real quick fix to get out of that. Because if you remove that empathetic person, is that right? Empathic person out of equation, I don't think we do as well. I think we remove that the quality that we represent in what we do. We're self-employed. You know, at the end of the day, we've got to give it all. We've got to give it our entire personality. When you're self-employed, there's nowhere to hide. When you're working for someone, you don't have to give it 100%. Someone's giving you the money to do that, you know, personality-wise. You have to give it 100% in a different place, which is doing the job. You don't have to give it your full attention of personality. We withdraw a little bit in a paid role, but in a self-employed role, because it's income, because it's our livelihoods, because it's bills we have to pay outside of the business, a rent, a mortgage, our council tax and everything. You know, when someone says, sorry, I'm not taking that job, you spent all that hard work and it's worth a couple of grand to you.
Yeah,
it's going to hit you, man. It really is. I don't know the answer to it. I just don't know the answer. It's going to continue happening. I'm going to continue being insulted. People. Come on. Wait, go on, Tom.
No, go on.
I was going to sound weird, so I talked over you. Apologies. Go for it, man. What were you going to say?
No, I was going to say it's just people, isn't it, really? People. I think at the end of the day, you're dealing with people, and that's just people. Really, you're one will experience great people, great candidates if we're talking about recruitment, but just in general, you'll come across people that you think your judgment was right at that time, but really you don't.
You can't. It's hard, isn't it, listening to that gut feeling as well with some people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Especially when you want to see the best out of people at the same time. So you've got that gut feeling and you think, oh, you're going to let me down. Oh, but yeah. I really need this.
Yeah.
So you kind of let you go with that. Do you know something, especially in our current situation in with the coronavirus and everything, I'm seeing all types of people come out of the woodwork now, whereas most people kind of, you had to meet people to find this personality from them. But I'm starting to see very, very horrible personalities come out of the woodwork. Really nice people come out of the woodwork as well. Supportive people, which I'll mention in a second where I've seen this mostly. Then I've seen people that don't give a fuck. And that's really kind of worrying me. And there's this group of people that don't give a crap. So when we see people on LinkedIn, people have lost jobs and really want to help, really want to support, and they really want to do what they can for them. And then you've got this group of people there and they're saying, why the hell are you doing that? Fuck them. I'm not going to help people. I'm here to look after myself. And then they go real kind of horrid and real, you know, some of these people letting people go at the moment from recruitment agencies because what are they really losing at the moment? Look, quit. You know, hold on to them for a couple of months. And if your business is that close to the wire and you can't hold on to a couple of people for a few months, why are you in business? Because you're going to go pop any minute now. Do you know what I mean? So those are really, really horrible people. And then you've got these hoarders then. What was a life? Society and hoarding at the moment. I can't get my head around it. Really can't get my head around it. We're in a strange time where we're starting to see some real personality traits, aren't we? Out there.
Yeah. It's just the way of life. And I did see some news the other day on this corona thing again, that there was people going into Aldi and Lidl and there was a small sort of bite and there were people spitting on the food because then they have to actually sell the food to that person, which I think is absolutely disgraceful.
What the hell? That is horrible. That is horrible. Do you know, we get these people now in society which were doing that, they really don't care about anyone else. I think we should now start penalising for this, for doing these things. I don't mean like in a draconian way. I think, you know, if you were doing that, then that to me is you know, in these circumstances where, let's face it, it's like a war. everyone needs to band together now. Everyone needs to look after each other. But in a time of war where people were being like that, with whole rationing and stuff like that, they ended up in prison. Obviously, that's a bit draconian, a bit extreme in this circumstance. But why don't we fine them 100 quid for that? I mean, it's just impact them in a way. They redecide what they're doing. This is not normal circumstances. We're in an abnormal situation. We can't have people in arseholes in this situation. And I'm sorry, I have to lump in all those employers that have decided to wipe out 60-70% of their business because they want to maintain their profit level, their shareholders. Fuck the shareholders. Let's look after people. Why can't we look after heartbeats? What the hell's going on, Tom? Why can't we do that?
I think the way people are, I appreciate that people have got kids and family, and to be fair, if I had a family, then that comes first, and they want to make sure that they provide for their family, and that is their main priority. You've also got people that haven't got a family, but they want to make a priority for maybe their family, their parents, or if it's not parents, then it could be their nearest and dearest, uncle, auntie, nan, etc., etc. But it's that manic phase and people out for themselves. Now, we, as a business, we've tried to offer help, remote work for people that are in the tough times. And it's sounding silly again, but not silly, but cheese. But if everyone comes together, and that it's quite a hard one to say everyone come together and everyone think, oh God, like, I've had enough of this. It's just every man for themselves sort of thing. It kind of like, someone said to me, we have to all go to the Winchester, which obviously is Shaun of the Dead. We'll all go to the pub and all barricade ourselves in that pub with all the apocalypse in them. But as I said, like, you can only be nice. You can only do so much for everyone else. And at the end of the day, you do have to think about your own health as well. And it's having that balance, being giving as much as you can, because we're offering support at the moment and trying to do as much as we can, but as well as doing our own things as well, trying to make sure I'm not bulk buying or anything like that. And
it's a little bit,
but I understand people with children and infants for nappies and providing that sort of service, and obviously the elderly. Obviously my mum's 70, so I worry about her. But I think it's hard to worry about everyone, and sometimes worrying about everyone and giving everything you have to everyone else, and then sometimes who's going to worry about you?
I think it's a case about being mindful about everyone. I think this is the mindfulness. Remember back in February when we were all posting on social media, we now need to look after each other after Caroline Flack sadly passed away. You know, we were all saying, let's be mindful about it. And that lasted not even 2 weeks before this virus kicked in here. Everyone was panicking and you know, mindfulness went out the window. And it's not so much about worrying about people. I do worry about people around me. I worry about my parents. I worry about even my next door neighbour at the moment is in his 70s and he's not very well, full stop. So if he gets this virus, you know, there could be some sad consequences for them. But it's about being mindful about it. So I think this is what's happened in society lately. And the psychology of hoarding actually is quite simple. You see other people do it, so you do it. And that's the problem. We have a society where they're not mindful of it. They don't think for themselves. Individualism seems to be the biggest thing. The problem with individualism in society, and this is just my thought on it, is it's got to come from somewhere. And sadly, to date, if you look at society, and now you look at people being released and made redundant at the moment, individualism is basically selfishness. We're being trained and taught and manipulated in society to be very selfish and look after ourselves. And this is why we have high homelessness, why people, it's reflected even with things like Brexit and voting for a Tory government and stuff like that, where, you know, it's, I'm all right, Jack, I'm fine, you know, I don't give a fuck about you, I'll be all right. Whereas, you know, you look at Jeremy Corbyn and what he was offering with free broadband, looking after the sick, looking after the elderly, more money for this, more money for that, handing money out. he wasn't handing money out. He was handing hope. He was trying to give society hope because it became very individualistic and selfish. And if there was a point to prove that, it's now. It's been proven that this is the situation. And that's the sad thing. Now, everyone's reflecting. You listen to some of the words being used by leaders and by certain members of the government now. They're reflecting how bad the society's become and what we need to do to change that. And I say, I really think this virus might have changed the mind map of people coming out of the virus. People could be a lot more aware of the jobs they're going at. Are they going to be looked after? People are going to be a lot more aware about money, where the money's coming from, and the government help. You know, is free broadband really that bad now when you think about it and stuff? UBI, universal basic income. You know, most of us are going to be out of money soon if we're on lockdown for 2 or 3 months. Who's going to pay our bills?
That is key. I think with the business that we're in at the moment, obviously technology is great and obviously it's all booming. Everyone's remotely working. I think that's great. But like one of our sites, the other side of the business has been shut down. So we've got workers there that are not going to be able to come back till maybe May. So we're kind of like, well, what do we do as a business? Because since obviously speaking to you and the previous way and ClearPath as a whole, we had hiring plans coming up in April. We have recently acquired a new office in last month. It was a derelict house. It was a derelict building, which, well, the room office space is a derelict. Complete derelict. So I am completely rubbish at manual labour, and I think I've never ever, because being a only child as well, it kind of, you're sugar-coated with my mum, and it's only now that I've kind of had you kind of have a realization of like how much. Sounds stupid, but like you go into the real world and you're having responsibilities, you're like, well, what do I do? So having the office and doing that up has given it was kind of an exciting time for us as well, because we revamped the whole of the office, which we'll showcase soon, hopefully, once this is settled. And because I obviously know a lot. Everyone, it's nice to see how people are doing and stuff, but obviously people seeing other people's success. But it wasn't to showcase us as a business. Well, it was that as well, but it was to showcase the commitment and someone like myself who has no experience in painting, manual labour, doing anything like that, and being able to help and assist and build, repaint the building. Do it from scratch was like a little project you would do with your dad when you're doing the Lego, or when you some people had a car with their dad and they wanted to do a project. This was kind of like my thing. I've never had that with it. I've never had that before. So it kind of a sentimental value for me, having something that I've got now and
build.
Go in there and do it, because it looks now amazing. Been able to realise what we can do to be able to get something looking lovely, and that was from what it was to now. It is amazing. It was kind of nice to go to work, and because there's only a certain amount of hot desking you can do, and obviously, as you probably know, Mark, as well, it's sometimes quite hard to motivate yourself if you're working from home a lot.
That's a tough one. It's a real hard one. I'm so impressed with that. So how long is this office going to be under construction, or is it finished now, or whereabouts are you with it?
Yeah, so it's been in the last sort of 4 weeks that we acquired the office. We thought we could make it work, and as I said, I've never done any sanding before, I've never done any painting before, I've had small petty arguments about plaster been plastering the walls because and putting emotion paint, because I assumed at that point that you put the emotion paint on and then you just whack another load of emotion paint straight on it, even though it's wet. So I've probably gained a load of manual labor skills by doing it. I think sometimes it's nice to have something different to do, because I hate it. So if anyone's listening and thinks, oh, I need a laborer, do not ask me, because that will be a complete decline. But it's just one of them things that you just learn as a life skill as well. Where we were at, we were at where we're employing someone in April. We were trying to, for the business itself, it's kind of this is the start. I know obviously nearly 2 years now and working with some great clients. But this was now to try and sort of scale it a little bit more. But there's only a certain amount you can do at home, and hot desk in London and meeting your candidates there. It's nice to have an environment that you're doing. So it was nice to do it all from fresh, because we've done it for how we would want to do it and work there. We're kind of at that stage. We've laid all the carpet. So I think when you haven't got any help, well, you have got help, but you kind of want to do it all yourself too, it is quite frustrating, because you're going to, you don't want to, some of the quotes that we originally got was like 1,000, 2,000 for carpet. And so it's quite a big space. And we ended up going to a sort of ad hoc dealer. And you can't take them tiles back if it doesn't work. It's a gamble that you take. You buy the tiles and you can't take them back or exchange and refund. So you're going by face value. Yeah. Luckily, that my colleague has a bit more of an understanding of this sort of side, because he's actually brought a house sort of 3 years ago and he's done most of the work himself. One, to save money, but two, it's kind of a sense of an achievement.
I agree with that, because I'm in the process of buying a house at the moment, and it's especially during these weird times as well. It's a bloody nightmare in the best of times, but it's a headache at the moment. And I'm looking forward to building stuff and putting shelves up. I used to be an engineer, so I miss doing something with my hands. And I've actually got plans. I've downloaded loads of them to build my own shed office. That's where I'm at with it at the moment in my head. I just hope it all goes through now. So I could build this bloody office. But I know what you mean, that sense of achievement of doing something that you could say, I built that. Is that a man thing? But ladies, if you're listening to this podcast, do you do this as well? I mean, it's a man thing, whether it is. It's nice though, isn't it? When you build a company and it's in your bedroom, it's not the same as building a company office. Is it really? It's not the same. It's different. It's better. I think personally, I love to be there. I love to be seeing that.
I think sometimes you kind of, it sometimes doesn't feel like it's mine and I'm doing the work, and it doesn't feel that ownership of myself, because I think sometimes it seems that it's a bit of a dream. And I'm not one to brag about success, because I think a lot of people will see posts on LinkedIn, oh, look at our new office, and it is, and you think, oh, well done you. Do you know what I mean? But it's not about, I don't want to show it. I will do, because I just want to show that even if you have got obviously dealing with mental issues, or you're dealing with, you're doing something out of your normal comfort zone to try and achieve, then it's nice to see the before and after. And I'm not showcasing what all the professionals come in and did it all up and, oh my God, it's amazing. But it's because we have done it all from ourselves. And luckily I've taken a lot of guidance from my colleague, because as I said, he's done his house up. So I've kind of had to learning. It's just like learning. Things that potentially I probably wouldn't do if I didn't have this opportunity. But now, being in this pandemic, you think of just you think, oh, well, I've just done all this and now this is kind of like, well, it was my kind of like going to be my sort of space to go to. There's so much space. We took all this blinking, it's like a PVC black sort of shade on the windows, it stinks. It, when you peel it off, I think it's kind of protect the UV light coming in.
Yes, yeah, I've shared that one, yeah.
Taking all that off and then all the light coming in, it was like a greenhouse in there, but it just seemed right next to the seafront. It just seemed, it sounds stupid, but, and I've said this before in the previous podcast, but just tranquil.
Yeah.
Like, just sat at rest. I feel sometimes when I'm sort of going off pace now, but
that's
when
fine.
I'm in the countryside, there's just some sort of sense of freedom being in London and you obviously traveling. Obviously I'm in London to meet clients, but I feel for people that are doing the commute and obviously have to do the commute, obviously to run a lifestyle, run a family. But if it was me in my dream world, I'd love to just live in the country. live in the country, wake up and just listen to just nature. That sounds stupid, but my brain, I think some people with mental illness and how they are, everyone's got different trigger points. But for me,
go back to nature, isn't it?
Just listening, embracing it all. It just gives you some sort of sense of freedom. Like I think before when I spoke to you at the previous podcast, like meditation stuff like that, and in the summer I was kind of sitting out in the garden. But obviously, there's only a certain amount of space in the garden you can sit there and listen to. But everyone's meditations are different, and people who have got obviously mental illnesses, some people don't take medication for ADHD and feel that they can meditate through and they're able to. Unfortunately, I can't do that, but it's great that people can do these sorts of things. I think people think meditating, you're in the lotus leaf position. But there's all sorts of different ways. I've been listening to Alexa and asking it to play background noise at night.
Yes, I do. I do it ocean sounds. I do it for oceans.
Yeah. Yeah. And that and waterfall sounds in the Amazon rainforest.
Oh, it knocks me out. Knocks me out every time. I've had a stressful day, shit bins into my head, and I tell it to play ocean sounds as I'm laying in bed, and suddenly I'm just gone. I'm out cold. And it's something about water, or something about the sound of an ocean, or something about that just relaxes me and just gets me in that right frame of mind. You were mentioning about going to the countryside, actually. I was on a mountain bike ride yonks ago, and I thought, I've never been down this path before. So I just headed down this path, and it went on for miles. This field, and then bush, and then gate, and then field, and bush, and gate, miles. I didn't want it to stop. I was just going for miles. I got to a point where I hit this road, realised which road it was, and it was about 9-10 miles outside Tamworth. And I was like, I go back the way I came. And if I did, it was all uphill. I didn't really want to do that. Some fields and bushes and stuff. And so I went back on the road. I was going back on the road. I was miserable riding back on the road. I've been off and down pavements because of traffic and whatnot. God, I was just this tranquil moment of just going on for miles in the country, not a soul in sight. It was amazing. I was in a really nice place when I got to that road. And when I went back on that road, I felt stress come back. The pain, knowing that you screw yourself up a little bit. That's crazy, absolutely crazy.
Especially if you're in the valleys.
No, I'm in Tamworth. I'm over in Tamworth, so I'm not in Wales. I wish I was in the valleys, though.
I think you then realise that you're going back into civilization and you're in your own little world at that point. People living in London, I think, that because they've been brought up and been around it so much, they're used to it. And I've had people come down, friends and clients, itching to come. Oh, Tom, do you mind if we do the meet in Brighton? Because I just want to see the sea. Or I want to be near the seafront. Even if there are seagulls nicking your chips off the pier, they probably wouldn't care because they've seen a seagull. It's just one of them things that
it's amazing
for everyone else. And if you're brought up nearby the sea, you think, it's nice going into London. So it's always a catch 22 because everyone likes all different things. People like to go from Scotland down here. It's just
it is
what it is.
I was brought up in West Wales. The closest beach to us was like 4 miles away. So I lived literally on the coast, Pemby and and Stefan and Amroth and places like that. Saundersfoot, people know Saundersfoot from holidays in Westfield. It was my stomping ground. I used to go for a ride down there. That was where I lived. And I didn't surf or anything like that back then, but I was in the sea all the time. We all learned to swim by the time we were five. You know what I mean? Because we were always in and out of the ocean. And like my granddad on summer holidays would take me down to the beach and we just walk the beach. If it was raining, we'd still go to the beach. We spent all our lives on the beach, we did when we were kids. Even actually up until probably when I was about 20, 21, really. Mm. I was still near the coast when I was doing my apprenticeship as well in RFs in Athens. So I was always near the beach. Now I live in the most central part of the country, which is Tamworth, which is like the middle of the country. We go about 3-4 times a year camping on the coast because I miss it so much. And I recharge. There's something about it. It's like back to nature, I think, especially if you've lived in nature. You live in Brighton. It's going back to go back to the sea and recharging.
Going to the woods and singing Kumbaya. That's the.
I think
obviously that's in an ideal world, and I think where the world is at the moment, it's a different way now, isn't it? You've got to be very understanding to everyone else, and that's the key thing. People might act in a certain way, and then suddenly, if people change, they always think people something wrong with them. And sometimes people might be act exactly the same way they do, but
it's stressful times. We've got to forgive a lot of people that. We've got to be mindful that everyone's under a lot of pressure. People are just being made redundant, or their partners or job is a threat. We're going into lockdown. Very scary, panicky times at the moment, and we've got to be understanding. Although I don't give the hoarders who aren't being mindful or the people which are cutting people's jobs and not really thinking ahead, I don't quite forgive them just yet, but maybe in a couple of months I might start realising why they did it. I think the problem is at the moment we've got a lot of people now worried and scared of the future and what it holds, and we need to be a lot more open and understanding. What do you think is going to happen over the next couple of months? What's your thoughts?
That's $1 million question, isn't it?
It is. I can't even think what's going to happen. What would you like to see happen? What would you like to see happen then?
I would like to see what. Well, it's a really good question. I can't. Now, I'm probably the worst person to ask that question, but I'll give you what I think, because I am very much a day-by-day guy. Do the here and now. My colleague is very much 3 or 4 months ahead of me in the ways of his thinking. So if it was an ideal world, I hope that this, by maybe doing the isolation and cutting off everything for maybe 14 days, if everyone just stayed in. Obviously, no one wants to stay in because it's not great for mental health, but having some sort of shutdown to prevent this, because I think I've seen all that sort of China, Korea or Asia, and they're all gone back. And I did see a little thing this morning in Australia that they're allowing people to come out. It sounds weird when people say allowing people to come outside, but I just hope that all the businesses, and this is sort of a bit of a shout out for businesses and bigger companies, that we all sort of come through as together, because it's not just the business obviously wanting to causing an issue, it's obviously people mental health as well, and coming out of this, you want people to develop mental illnesses to then have a knock-on effect to them themselves. I wish I could just give you a more of an answer, because I'm so very much day by day.
It's tough to project, I think, at this moment in time what the future holds. I would love this to be all over and done with by the end of April. If that's an even possibility. In order to do that, like you said, we probably need about 2-3 weeks of shutdown. Well, how long has Italy been shut down now? For about 4 weeks, isn't it? They've been in lockdown. We're about 4 weeks behind it, 3 weeks behind it.
No, it seems like it's going to get worse than it's going to get great. But like it's now, it seems like the Queen, you know, like obviously at Christmas, everyone
Queen's speech, yeah.
Listening to the Queen's speech, you're kind of now doing that on a daily basis, going into the front room. Oh, shush, shush, don't say anything. We're all sort of sitting there watching Boris Johnson listen to it. And you're kind of like, you kind of just, okay, yeah, that applies to me, that doesn't apply to me, right? That you're kind of thinking at that point, where does this fit? But at the end of the day, you think, well, these are all words. When, how can you act? I did see that there's cash grants, there's packages that are being put together, but then when is that going to be?
It's not accessible to all businesses, by the way. It's protecting a very few amount of businesses, whereas some businesses fall into that kind of acceptable loss of 15-25%. When you kind of, for me, I think we need to look after the people as much as we need to look after business. So I think everyone needs to be looked after here to reduce anxiety. I think there's a lot of anxiety at the moment. People want to know how they're going to pay their bills at the end of April. How are we going to do that?
And just worry about the people that are self-employed, because there's not everyone not everyone's paying a mortgage.
No, they're renting.
The people that are that are actually renting properties.
And then you've got to protect the people that own the property, and they've got mortgages, some of them have. So, you know, if you protect the people which are paying the rent, in other words, give them money to pay the rent, then the people above them and that own the property to look after, and then the people above them that borrowed the money from, the banks, will be looked after as well, rather than popping it in the wrong place, if you know what I mean. Put the money in somewhere at the top of some company in the hope it trickles down. It doesn't. It never trickles down to the right people. I think this is where we can reduce a lot of problems now by helping people. Loan, great. Some people are going to save their businesses with a loan. But if their businesses is against the wall, like I said earlier, if your business is against the wall prior to this and you need a loan to survive, is your business going to be around September anyway? You know, and this is, some of them are laying off staff. You need to lay off staff. Why are you laying off staff?
What can you do? Because the people that are sort of self-employed, and like, just for example, today, obviously having one of the sites gone down, then these people need access to this money now.
Yeah.
When can they access the money? Do you know what I mean? So there's no, it's uncertain of when, how, what, where. It's kind of one of them things. But how sort of for mental, having mental conditions and things like that, this would, if not, if anyone has any underlying mental issues or kind of has them at bay, this is going to bring it out even more.
I know.
We could all come out of this booming for business for everyone, but this could also be also another issue for people that have got underlying issues. And so you just kind of think, well, that's, it's just another, it's just a ball of issues.
If you're in it. And this is the thing, we're literally pausing the world right now, or the Western world is on pause at this moment in time. And because the way society works, it works month on month, or day on day, where money's always been exchanged, that money stops. So we're going to if you've got no money, then the world can't move. So when it come out the other end of this, we've got 2-3 months, maybe 4 months of no money in the system. There's going to be some sort of like lag, this, some sort of further future problem. And if it continues, you know, for instance, the recession, with 500 billion pumped into the banking system, people still lost their jobs for 500 billion. This is probably bigger than the recession. Not at the moment financially, because the amount of money that's pumped in is only 330 billion at the moment. That's a couple of quid here and everywhere. If there's any more money pumped into it, if you can reflect upon the recession and how long it took to get out of quantitative easing, the government reducing spend, that took 10 years. We're still in austerity to this moment in time. So this could be another 10 years of austerity for the poor. So I think this might be a really good time now to start reflecting upon society and how we've been living our lives. Because this is a virus. Are you a big believer in global warming at the moment and climate change, sorry, I should say? Do you feel that it's something we need to be concerned about?
That's a great, isn't it? Another great question.
I'm sorry to throw that one at you, Tom.
Yeah, just put me on a spot now. So, yeah, I think, if I'm honest, the thing is, I'm not going to bullshit. You kind of just, you listen to other people, what they say, and you kind of go, well,
yeah.
I'm a sponge. My brain's a sponge, and I kind of absorb everyone else's sort of advice, thoughts, and I take on it all. But I kind of just think, well, what would I, with some bit of my own spice with it, if that makes sense? I'm kind of listening to the news now religiously. I've never listened really to the news that much.
It's a lifetime, isn't it?
It's kind of like now I'm been able to have these conversations. But
yeah,
like I said, like I do listen to the news, and I just sometimes think that there's things that are irrelevant to.
I'm just going to say, this is the problem with at the moment, is that people have been caught out by the virus. It's exactly what you said, and it, you know, something's irrelevant to you, something's not. This is now relevant to everyone. The reason I bring climate change into this, this is a dress rehearsal for, if the experts are right about climate change, in 20, 30 years' time, what's going on now is probably nothing compared to what could potentially go on in 10, 15 years' time, 20 years' time. I don't know when global warming's going to hit us, or climate change is really going to hit us. This is what they're saying. You know, climate change might happen progressively. The virus has happened suddenly. But what if certain elements of global warming or climate change hits us head on? Like the entire ice cap melts in one big summer because it's too hot. Yeah. These are the things we need to worry about now. So this virus might be an epoch in the human race at this moment in time, where we might have to start thinking differently, doing business differently, living our lives differently. And there's a lot of noise at the moment coming from different corners of politics about universal basic income, or wiping out everyone's debt, or resetting the world debt. There's loads of these little things that is coming out at the moment, and it's quite worrying times, but equally quite exciting times. I don't know about you, I'm finding it quite interesting actually. On which direction it's going to go in. But yeah, like you said, it'll take you years to come. This could be all over in a month.
I don't know. It's just finding, going day by day, really. Some people are able to do it, start thinking ahead. You kind of just go day by day what you should really be doing, obviously, with the government's advice. I think, I don't know. I can't. Like my balls are hairy, not crystal. Do you know what I mean? But you kind of, I try and make a few joke, not joke about what's going on, but you kind of
have to.
People start having cabin fever, and then
you
start being on top of each other. You then start taking calls in the toilet. You all then you start going in the loft to move around from each other. You're kind of tiptoeing around people like eggshells, because you don't want to be in their way, and there's people in the other house that are working, so you just got to be respectful. But
you know,
the thing I struggle with is playing badminton. And obviously, previously, before, as we said, like I made a county again, and I'm playing at a national level again now.
Well done.
We played a tournament in Oxford University the weekend. I made a final in Kent. I was runner up. I came second. So I've achieved. I'm achieving the goals that I want to, because as I said to you, I think before, I said I want to make county again, badminton. That's one of my goals. I made that goal. It was kind of carry on the play and get the ranking points up, then moving on to the office. It's kind of these sort of things hinder your roadmap of where you want to be going, and the people that you want to be helping along the way as well. No one can control the situation, so it's been harsh, but you just have to do everything you possibly can to help yourself and others, and just make sure that you're preparing, because some people think, oh no, I'll be right, but you can't always think that.
Correct. I think, and this is one bit of advice that's been given to me in the last 12 months, because I've had a bit of a annoyance with Brexit and how slow the market has been. You know, businesses have been nowhere near where it should be, which is really a shame. It's an absolute shame, because we're starting to pick up a little bit this year. Was because Brexit now, we know what's going on. We know where it's going, the point. Some people said to me, you know, focus on what you can control, not what you can't control. And it's right. We can only just focus now on what we can control, what we can do, and just try to push upon that part of your life. If you haven't got money to pay bills, then there's options, there's hope out there for you to kind of do that. But you can't, you know, at the end of the day, we can only control so much of what's going on around ourselves, which is an absolute shame. We have to put our hopes, our dreams, our businesses, our lives on hold because of a really, well, I think it's a serious virus. I was looking at the science long before the panic buying started, and I said, when this hits us, it's going to be big, which here we are, sadly. But yeah.
It's a shame. We're all in this. But yeah, I'm really hoping just for, not just for myself and everyone else as well that is listening, that we get through this. And because if Australia are going out and China are back to normal civilization, it's kind of, it's just, you know how it goes. It's just like a dominoes effect where
you
will be hit, and then you just got to ride it, deal with it at that point. But I can understand. I can't just sit here and say, look, yeah, deal with it.
Yeah.
But it's because there's people, like, I understand that if I was in my position, I'd be fucking worried at the moment because of the self-employed and the things that I've mentioned about being people in manual labour.
Yeah.
People's hands are their talent. People's with their voices are talent. Do you know what I mean? Everyone's different in their own ways.
Yeah, but everyone's affected. It doesn't matter what talent you've got at the moment. Everyone's affected by this.
A football player and you're earning mega money,
but
then is that really, having all that money, would that really give you happiness?
True.
You can't buy happiness. And if you're, which things that I've learned, and more at a more spiritual level and really deep is that, like, you have to be happy with yourself before,
like, accepting yourself.
Committing suicide and things like that, which is absolutely devastating for people and people's icons. But do you know what I mean? They had all the money in the world, had probably a lot of money. And people think, oh, I want to win the lottery, I want to win this. Okay, that will solve short-term positions for them. But mentally, if you're not mentally stable or happy with you, then how can you ever love or be happy with yourself or other people? Because
that's right.
It's the way it is.
Oh, mate. Well, on that note,
sounds sort of quite deep, and it's only sort of being speaking to everyone, and I think getting older, and just, but now I'm this person. It's you kind of then realise the deep people, and you start understanding people's social skills, and you're able to have these deep conversations with people, because a lot of people bottle things up and they feel that people will judge them if they talk about it. But I've had some crazy conversations, mostly with my colleague and other people, and my badminton doubles player, he's actually only 17.
Oh, is
it? He's been one of the most people that I've met, and he's all about psychology and sports, and you kind of like having these conversations with these people at another level than I normally would, then like, oh yeah, it's good, and it's that, or just normal conversations, and then going full blast, and then going into things that mechanics of the mind.
Yeah.
It really, really interests me, and I've been able to really sort of find out about yourself until you look at yourself and, like myself, like I used to look at myself and think, what the fuck? Like, but I was carrying on until
you
hit you, or you have something that's happened, and you kind of then people then start to maybe do sort of self-realization.
Yes, and that's it. When you get when you hit that point of self-realization and you look within yourself, you do start getting those deeper meaning of yourself and other people. And you know, people listening to this will probably think this is kind of a little bit hippie-ish, but it's the reason you think that is because you probably never looked inside yourself and realized, you know, what you need to do to bring the direction you want to go with your life and who you are and what you want to do. And otherwise, you just fall in through life. People say that, you know, there's two types of people: people running towards something and people running away. Which one are you? And normally, people running towards something have had that moment of, I don't, you know, people call it spirituality or realization, self-realization, whatever it is. It's looking within themselves and thinking, yes, that's the direction I want to go. That's who I am. And then they start running towards it. Whereas a lot of people are, you know, I don't want to be in there. I don't want to have this. I don't want to have that. So they're trying to run away from that. And picking and choosing the things that they believe is right for them at that moment in time. I'm regretting it. But no, you know, always looking back, always thinking, I don't want to be near that anymore.
Yeah. I think a lot of people as well, if obviously people that listen to the podcast think, oh, well, how can you, well, you the focus now is obviously one, probably money for people.
Yes.
Two, job security. So I think it's quite hard to the things that you're saying, like obviously we were talking about now, like loving yourself and loving others, la la la. Because the main focus is the main general life now.
That's right.
So being able to be able to do that. And I think that's the hardest thing because no one can reflect on themselves when they've got these sort of underlying, not maybe not issues, but these things, these tasks or sort of things that are going to be coming up and trying to get over them. So I think a lot of people are not going to really focus on looking at themselves and the people that are at that stage because this is going to be their focus at the moment and people that are sort of trying to provide for your family.
Yeah.
Like obviously one being yourself.
Exactly, mate. Exactly. Well, thank you, mate. Thanks for your time. This is absolutely amazing to catch up with you and get your thoughts on life as we know it. Seriously, mate. What's next for you? So, obviously, you've got this office move. You've got everything going on. Is there anything else happening into the future on the personal side?
I think I'm kind of riding the wave. I think all my badminton's been cancelled because of a social event or tournament. That is a massive key indicator for me because that is the only thing that I feel that I can actually excel in.
Yeah.
I don't have any other sports. I do like running. Maybe I might do take up some running and.
Especially now, sort of you've got some too. Time now to do that.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm still hiring at the moment, so it's kind of like.
Yeah.
As I said earlier, the show must go on, and I've got hiring, sort of. Demands at the moment that I need to make for a particular client. So luckily for the client that I'm working with that they still got aggressive growth plans, which is great for some people out there that if they are looking, that it's a great time. But obviously there's a flip side on that. People that you are in probably job security at the moment probably won't be wanting to look for another job just because of everything going on, and they may have been a company 6-7 years plus. So
it's a knock-on effect, isn't it? Where yes, you may have jobs, but people then will reflect and think, I want to leave this job. It's having jobs or not having jobs on at the moment in recruitment may be the same, may have the exact same effect, basically, the problematic issues. They're all kind of in it together, I guess, in this scenario.
And I just said, like, it's going to be one of them things, but you know, I can only offer my support to anyone that feel like they might be in the same way, sort of sector, or they need, like, as I said before, I'm not a specialist, but if people want to talk, I know if people actually want to come to me now and have a debate, and I'll try, then please do. I feel free. I'd love to have a little debate about certain things.
Yes.
If people want support, the mental side, a mental illness side, please feel free to message me and have a conversation. I'm happy to have a conversation with people and try and offer advice or anything like that. And work wise please come to me if you're in a bit of a loose end. I won't say that I can promise you the world, but if you are sort of need something, then I might be able to potentially sort out some remote work for a couple of my clients who are looking to support. So that support will be carried on by myself as well.
Awesome. Brilliant. Thanks, Tom. Thanks for your time, mate.
Thanks for speaking, Mark. And I'm glad, I'm glad that you can see a difference as well. And I said, maybe look forward to catching up. Maybe we could do a podcast with you and ask you loads of questions. That'd be great.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Look forward to it. Take it easy, mate. Bye-bye.
You too. Take care, Mark. Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Again, sorry about the sound of that one for myself. The microphone reverted to the laptop, but I hope you got quite a lot from that. Strange times, we're in really, really strange times, and hearing people as positive as Thomas, still out there, still keeping the fight going, taking it day by day, is really, really encouraging to me and to hear. So I'm hoping the next load of podcasts over the next couple of weeks, with better sound, like this microphone for instance, will be coming out for me. And talking about this condition we're in and this situation that we need to deal with as a collective, as a human group of people right now, trying to solve the problem that we're in. So I really hope you guys can stick around, and I really look forward to some new guests. Reach out. Speak to me. Let's have a conversation. I look forward to speaking to you soon. Take care. Bye-bye.